Welcome to It's a Code World, your digital marketing podcast. This podcast will give you practical insights on how to better digitally market your business, be more organized, and get more customers.
Hey, how's it going? This is It's a Code World, and we're going to be talking today about how to use drone footage for marketing, and I'm here with Mark Teske.
Hey, everybody.
Mark and I were just at a party the other night at a... What was it? What was the party?
Oh, I think it was called the Blackfoot Bash. One of our partners, Sustainable Nine, a building company here in Minneapolis, put together an unbelievably cool kind of Minnesota modern three-story home, super energy efficient, and they packed it full of $300,000 worth of art and threw a grand opening party for it at the end of the artisan home tour. It was unbelievable.
So, really, really awesome. What was your favorite food item there? There's a lot of good food.
Well, here's the problem. I was actually working, so I didn't get to eat.
Hey, that feels like a personal attack.
Oh, I know. Rub it in. They hooked me up with a signature cocktail at the end of the night, though, so I guess I can't complain too loud.
They had some really good poke, so I'm not going to rub in the food, but very good tuna, basically, and I think some salmon. But,
yeah, it looked delicious. I'm not actually a super raw fish guy, that was okay. I wasn't really...
I moved from sushi. I remember when I had sushi for the first time when I was 19, and I was in Hawaii a couple years ago when I asked Bia to marry me, and we had poke for the first time, which is basically just raw fish, just diced. And I was so sad. Like, just being landlocked in the middle of this country that you can't get this such high quality fish as you like. It's just plentiful out in Hawaii, obviously, but
yeah. And I actually think poke is kind of like the next big thing. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that even here in the Midwest.
Oh, for sure. I mean, once you get like the poke that we had in Hawaii is just like, they were serving it up like we serve up pasta and you know, like the deli. Sure. At the grocery store, they're serving it up like that. It's so much healthier, obviously.
Kind of Tom Cruise cocktail style, flipping it through the air.
And yeah, they just have it everywhere there. So it's like, you just kind of feel gypped when you come back and you're like, we don't have any good fish. And it's like, when I was growing up, I thought I didn't like fish. Because the fish that we did have was like, meh. You know what I mean? Especially if you try to get like salmon or something here, it's not normally fresh, so.
Well, there's a big deal between freshwater and saltwater fish for sure, too.
Yeah, the salt keeps it fresh out there. I like to think. But hey, you know, we always use a little thing to get this kicked off. What kind of tools do you use? And so today we'll be talking about drone footage. And what are some tools that you use to get the most out of drone footage, Mark?
Cool. Well, you know, when I jumped into doing drone footage, small UAS aerial photography, videography, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can refer to it. Most people kind of colloquially call it drone video or drone footage. You know, first and foremost, everybody thinks of the drone. So, you know, working outwards from there, I personally fly DJI Inspire drones. They're a professional grade, but still super easy to fly. Commercial drone that gives really excellent results that are kind of on par with the big cinema drones of even just 3-4 years ago. And, you know, super reliable, super low cost of maintenance, and great quality footage.
As a hobbyist, you can get a DJI too?
Absolutely. You know, the Inspire line is their top of the line, but they actually have several models beneath that. They've got most popular is the Phantom. I mean, if you think of drone, the Phantom is what comes to mind. I mean, it's got the, you know, you see the silhouette, you instantly know who made that copter. They've kind of become the iPhone of drones over the past few years. Okay. And, you know, they've got a couple of lower priced ones that are smaller and more portable, like the Mavic or the Spark, that can be had for as low as $500 and will give you decent results for web type applications. Like, I wouldn't necessarily think of using that for for a professional grade presentation. But, you know, if you need a grab shot and portability is key, they do an awfully good job.
Awesome. And you've got Premiere, Final Cut, iMovie down here.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing is, too, once you get all this footage, nobody just sits and wants to watch a stream of consciousness bit of footage that's 18 minutes long. You know, it has to be turned down into something that's concise, to the point, looks beautiful, shows only what you want to do. You know, Tim, there's this old adage that Benjamin Franklin said that, you know, I'm sorry I didn't write you a shorter letter. I didn't have enough time. And
exactly.
It's so true. You know, you really, less is more all the time. Yep. So you need to edit it down. A lot of tools on the market to do that. Some easier than others to use. Personally, I use all Adobe products like Premiere Pro because, you know, I get a high degree of productivity and professional quality out of it. If you're on the Apple side of things, Final Cut Pro also does a fantastic job. I've used that in the past myself. iMovie, yeah, I mean, I think every Mac these days comes with iMovie bundled right on it.
Yeah.
Premiere Elements on the Adobe, I think that's, you know, $99. And then even there's some iPad-based and mobile tools that do a pretty good job. I'm thinking like a program from GoPro called Quick, Q-U-I-K, that you can splice together shots pretty quick, pretty easily. As well as there's a pretty high-end nonlinear editor called LumaFusion, which I think is like $10 on the iTunes store. So
awesome.
A lot of different options, kind of all amounts of difficulty and price range that you can take on.
So like my thing with, you know, getting some of these quick tools for people is always like, all right, so some people won't be able to hire you. And yep. Some people won't be able to hire a professional. So if people are having fun, if people are just trying to put together something, what would they do? And I think about why this matters though, in the broader perspective of marketing, and why this matters, you know, for us as professionals starting to use drone footage to get more sales, to get more leads, to get more traction. Why does drone footage matter? Why does drone footage matter now?
Absolutely. Well, there's sort of two main reasons why drone footage is important, and why it can really be make a big impact for your business. Number one is it gives you a different perspective than you're used to seeing. Everybody drives by on the street, sees your business, sees your home, sees your complex, your bridge, whatever it is that you're trying to put together. And they see that view. That doesn't grab them. But now suddenly, once you get up in the air, you get a different perspective on what that looks like. You not only see the property, you see the neighborhood around it, the backdrop, the setting. Is it by a golf course? What are the roads leading up to it? Is it next to a river, lake, whatever? It really lets you see that property and see the context it's into. Now, I think an important call out there is that, you know, legally, we're allowed to fly up to 400 feet. 400 feet is really, really high. Like you can see an entire subdivision at 400 feet.
Hmm.
So it's hard to even pick out what it is that you're trying to do there. Honestly, some of the most compelling foot is 20 feet off the ground, 25 feet off the ground. So that way you're not looking at roofs. You're looking at the property itself coming in at it. You know, I know we didn't do much in the way of an introduction here coming in, but
go for it.
You know, my full-time role is running a architectural imagery agency that does high quality photography and video. So a lot of my clients are in the construction world. They're in the home building, commercial construction, landscaping realms, and you know, they're hiring me to produce video and photography footage of their properties, show it off in the most compelling way. And by getting that kind of 30-foot up view, you're getting a new perspective on it that you aren't seeing from the street. The other thing that it gives you is it gives you the ability to give a view that isn't easily obtained by any other method. I sort of call it
God. Can't throw your iPhone up in the air and get a little shot.
Can't throw your iPhone in the air. You can't get 30 feet up out in the lake. I sort of call it God's boom truck.
There you go.
You know, that you can kind of position that weird boom truck anywhere you want to and get that great shot in places that you can't get easily, you know, underside of a bridge or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two main compelling reasons for doing drone footage, is to give you that eye-grabbing view and to show you where it is and why it's there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I've seen it used on social media. I've seen it used on hero videos, like the main background for a website, and it can be done really, really well. I think we're at a spot in drone footage in the drone footage timeline where people have seen it, right? People have seen it.
Yeah, it's definitely out there.
They're impressed by it. It's not the most new thing ever right now, right?
For sure.
But people are getting better about figuring out what it could be used for and trying to wield that for their company. And I still think it catches people's attention, even though it's not like the newest thing ever. It catches people's attention and it does... you know, it does draw you into that video. If you see that, if you're scrolling by on your social feed, or if you're, you know, looking at a website homepage and you see that, it just grabs your attention. Where is it evolving to? Like, what is drone footage? What's next for drone footage? Where is it going?
Absolutely. You know, we're sort of starting to come into, you know, if we're looking at this in human terms, drone footage is kind of becoming just out of college.
Yeah.
You know, we're sort of in our mid-20s. We're kind of starting to have some mature thoughts, but, you know, there's still a little bit of wildness left in us. And fortunately, the industry is evolving in that way because, you know, the teenage years were a little rough for the drone industry.
Yeah.
And, but we're hitting a nice point in maturity that's only going to be getting better over the next few years in terms of not only the tools that are available to us, but also just the regulatory, the laws, public acceptance, and also most importantly, businesses are really figuring out what's good and what's, you know, the right way to use drone footage in a way that's useful for their business. And you know, the shininess of something new is a little bit worn off. Now it has to be good as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And the best stuff really, and in the same way that a good landscape photographer catches your eye, when you see a great piece of landscape photography, you just go, wow, look at that view.
Yeah.
And it still has that same magic when you get a great shot put together.
It's a really good way to put it. So there's a lot of drone pilots out there, or even people just kind of doing it as a hobbyist, but maybe trying to earn some money on it. Why do you not want to do that? Let's say, for instance, for Minnesota, where we're at right now, why do you not want to go out and as a hobbyist try to capture some business or try to, you know, wield that for business? Because you have to be licensed and insured, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a very key point to bring up, is that the FAA and the state of Minnesota defines commercial usage as done in the pursuit of a business. So that doesn't mean, you know, you may not have even been given a ham sandwich for flying. You know, if you are doing something in the pursuit of a business, you are doing it commercially, whether you personally are being compensated or not. So a lot of people think because they weren't given a check directly, they aren't doing it commercially, but really they are in the eyes of the FAA. So what to kind of take a step back, what's required here in Minnesota is a little bit more than other places in the country, and there's a few extra steps involved with that. So the FAA, first off, requires you to get what's called a Part 107 license. Part 107, it's also called a small UAS pilot's license, requires you to go in and take a written test that is mostly about learning the rules of the road. Think of it as the written test on a driver's license, where you need to learn the speed limits, you need to learn what stop, you know, how to take a right at a stop sign in aircraft terms. In our case, it's how do you read a map? How do you tell where you're flying someplace that you shouldn't be? It's a lot of policies and procedures around that. A lot of safety rules.
You're not supposed to fly over people's heads, I hear, like in a public area.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Flying over people's heads, flying inside restricted areas around airports or other guarded areas, checking to see if there are restrictions. Our president was up in Duluth last week, and you know they put a temporary flight restriction around the whole area. Well, if you weren't a licensed drone pilot, you may not have known to even check that. Mm-hmm. And a visit by the Secret Service is a bad end of the day.
Yeah, I wonder if there were any drone pilots out there.
You'd think there had to have been somebody.
Well, you're like, I mean, it'd be a great shot, right?
I'm sure, you know, and I'm guessing a lot of people just didn't know or wouldn't know that that's not allowed. Or so, you know, they maybe have gotten away with it, but I don't know. So additionally, here in Minnesota, we're required to get to be licensed with Minnesota Department of Transportation in their aeronautics division. We have to register both the drones that we fly commercially as well as ourselves, and we have to pay an annual license to do that. And one of the requirements for doing that is having that 107 license, as well as being, you know, carrying over $1 million. Don't quote me to that, but it's carrying liability insurance on top of that, so that if one of these drones that is, you know, maybe made by who knows who decides to suddenly stop flying, and trust me, gravity wins every single time.
Yeah.
If that decides to suddenly come earthward, what happens if it falls on somebody or something?
So that being said, I do want to give a little bit of hope for those that are looking for, that are maybe looking to start with this?
Absolutely.
So like, what's your first step if you want to become a drone pilot?
And you know what? I'd highly encourage it. Drone flying is absolutely one of the most fun things I do in my business. It's exhilarating getting up and flying and seeing what the birds see, and being up there with the birds is just it's the greatest feeling. It's really fun. I can't believe I get paid to do that.
Yeah.
You know, would highly encourage anybody with an interest in it to do that. So it's not that tough. You do need to pass the 107 test.
Yep.
You know, there are a million online guides on how, you know, study guides and places to learn, like Remote Pilot 101 is a good one. I think that's one of them that I used back in the day to learn the rules of the road. Then you have to schedule with an FAA testing center and go in and take the test. Then you need to find an insurance company that will insure you. Evan Garmin's treated me great on that one and hooked me up with drone insurance, both in terms of replacing my drone as well as liability. Be happy to give you his contact information to provide that in the show notes. And then finally, you need to register with the state. And so there's effort involved. You have to burn some calories to do that.
Yeah.
But I personally found the journey was super rewarding. Like, I was fascinated by learning all the rules and how all that stuff actually worked.
How about how about the hobbyist? Is there less for the hobbyist?
Yeah, there is. You can absolutely hobby fly without going and getting a license. The rules are a little different.
Yeah.
Me personally, I have to have authorization, pre-authorization from the FAA to fly inside a 5-mile radius of the major airports here.
Really? Okay.
And my business actually carries all of those. I'm authorized for the year to fly inside of all those areas.
Okay.
So I can just go in, and I have height limits on where I can fly and so forth. As a hobbyist, it's a little different. You're more or less not allowed to fly in that area without permission from the tower.
Gotcha.
So you have to call in. And they include actually things like, you know, dirt airstrips and helipads on top of hospitals. And so it's hard to find an area in the Twin Cities that isn't covered by one of those zones.
Yep.
But they exist. You can find them. And there are resources out on the web, like Kitty Hawk is a good program on iOS that allows you to look at those maps and see where you're allowed to fly and not.
That's awesome.
Air Map is another good one. So as a hobbyist, essentially don't fly within 5 miles of another area. Don't fly over anybody's heads. Sorry, that's going to be disappointing to all of you that want to film weddings, but don't fly over people's heads. Stay under 400 feet and just kind of, you know, use your head. Skip those hold my beer moments.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about how to make drone footage more compelling and talk about just some of the things I've seen as an outsider. I'm not necessarily a drone guy, but I've seen some things because it can go bad, right? Like if you're not using a professional and you're just trying to kind of on the fly, let's say on the fly and wing it.
Yeah.
Give
it a whirl.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. So one of the things is like people generally do this right, where they have some good music, because the music is a important choice when you're making some compelling footage. But you don't need to make it the whole length of a song necessarily. I think about when people are, you know, sharing this on social, they got 3.5 minutes. I'm interested for about 1.5 minutes, to be honest.
Sure, yeah.
And then classy titles. So this is one I've seen people drop the ball on. You can really make some really good looking or at least decent looking drone footage better with classy looking titles over the top.
Sure.
Or, you know, like in the final edits, like the finishing touches. If you just slap on any old font on the top of that, it can look messy and basically bring down the level of quality.
As it turns out, design is important.
Yeah, design is important. And then in the appropriate case where they have a compelling voiceover. So sometimes we need a narrative. Sometimes we need a story. Sometimes we need something to help give us context around what we're looking at. So having a compelling voiceover is a huge piece as well.
So actually, I think the most important thing that you just said was one word, story.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and this applies to even if you're just doing a quick little Instagram on the street corner with your iPhone. Got to have a story if you want people to watch it for more than 2 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's especially true with drone video or any piece of video that you produce. Even a photograph, you got to tell a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, a longer story has to have be more complex and more parts. If you just kind of have a single idea, well, that's a 30-second story.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to tell a 90-second story, you kind of got to have a first, second, and third act in that story that leads people and gets them interested, then presents a little conundrum, and then hooks them at the end with the resolution.
Exactly.
You've got to have those parts if you're going to expect them to watch it more than a couple seconds. So how does that map into drone footage? Well, usually we do it with establishing shots. Establishing shots kind of shows the background area of what we're trying to do and where we're at. Then we sort of introduce our main character, which is often a property. We then start giving you more, introducing you to that person, letting you learn a little bit more about them. What's it look like from the side? What's it look like from the top? What, you know, what's the swimming pool behind it look like? And then finally, we sort of give you that, you know, we kind of back out again to making the message clear about what is it like for you if you use that builder or live there or use, you know, that's sort of the hook.
Yeah.
You know, because that's that ultimately for a lot of you that are listening, that's going to be why you're going to use drone footage is because you want them to use you as your builder or you want to for them to live in your property or you want them to use your facility.
Yeah.
So story is a really, really big part in that one.
Huge.
And so backing out to music, music's a great point because oftentimes you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
You know, humans have a weird psychological thing in that they'll put up with really awful quality video, but they will not put up with awful quality sound.
Yeah.
That's in terms of voiceover or music.
Yeah.
I mean, think of all the YouTube concert videos out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be shaking all over the place, but if they if the sound is right off the soundboard, I'll sit and watch the thing. But if it's just, I'm out in 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's super important. Design is important, making it look good, and, you know, kind of roping it back full circle. Voiceover is an important tool in storytelling.
Yeah.
And giving you, you know, telling a person the things that may not be obvious intuitively by looking at the imagery. Although, properly done, the imagery should stand alone. You know, the voiceover just kind of keeps your interest throughout the whole process.
For sure. So if somebody is looking for a solid drone pilot, and, you know, this could be anywhere in the country, right? So, but we might talk a little bit about Minnesota. Like, what do people need to be looking for? How do you find a good drone pilot?
Absolutely. So I personally have a philosophy that, you know, there are pilots that became photographers or cinematographers, and there are cinematographers that became pilot. I'm in the second camp. I've been doing professional photography for almost and cinematography for almost 10 years. And I started there long before the drones, so I learned how to line up a nice shot before I learned how to fly. Take a look, you know, the imagery is really more important than being able to make a fancy move. You know, a simple move that's set up great with great light is going to look 1,000 times better than the most complex move on the planet.
Yeah, we were talking about, like, the example of darting through trees. Like, sure, you can do that, you can whatever, yeah. But it's not really going to tell the story in a compelling way, and usually it's those simpler, slower pans or whatever that are going to kind of give you that emotionally evocative feeling rather than
absolutely.
That darting and all that.
Absolutely. So that's one thing to look for is, you know, look at the quality of what you're getting. Is, you know, are things composed nicely? Does it have a nice sense of smooth pacing? Is it jerky? Are the colors
like
good?
Checking
are,
out their portfolio, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Does it look good? I mean, that's kind of the first thing to look for. Next thing to look for is, are they a professional operation? There's a lot of people selling their services right now that legally shouldn't be.
Yeah.
They don't have the licensing. They don't have the state permits. And most importantly, they don't have the insurance.
Yeah. And that kind of says something about their operation if they're not being professional anyways, right? Like, it goes deeper than that. Like, obviously, people should be getting the proper, like, if you're in your, whatever industry you're in, if you're a home builder, if you're a roofer, if you're a service provider of any type, if you didn't have the proper insurance and the proper licenses to do what you're doing, well, what does that really say about the quality of the end work too?
You know, for sure.
I mean, there's definitely some things you could kind of presume from that. If they are insured and licensed, there's something you can presume from that, which is that they have the professional stuff required for their business.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, a more common one, too, is somebody that'll only accept cash.
Yeah.
You know, that sends a different message.
Exactly.
So that's one thing to look, that's absolutely one thing to look, that's second thing to look for on that one. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there, you know, Google is your friend, and you're certainly, one of the things you're going to want to Google for is insured and Part 107. Those are a couple of search terms you're going to want. Also, too, check in with your state's Department of Aeronautics in their Department of Transportation. Like the Minnesota Department of Transportation has a Department of Aeronautics that has a list of all of the, who they consider to be the licensed pilots in the state. And that list is an awful lot shorter than the list of people that come up in Google. But if you want to make sure that who you're dealing with is really playing by the rules and operating as a legit business, that's a great place to start. And there's a lot of us out there. There's also the Minnesota Small UAS Consortium. It's a group of us that work together to sort of work with our legislation, work with public advocacy to paint a good face on our industry and try to advance our industry. And I'm sure you can find a similar organization in whatever state you happen to be in.
Awesome. Or you could just make it super easy on yourself and hire Mark. He is, you know, you can always talk to me if you're listening to this podcast and you know me, I'd love to make an introduction. Or check him out at teskeymediaworks.com, T-E-S-K-E-Y, mediaworks.com. And where can they find you on social, Mark?
Social media. I'm every place.
Maybe Instagram and Facebook. Let's
Instagram, start. Instagram, Teske Media Works. Same thing. And the key to spelling Teske is with a K-E-Y.
There you go.
You'll never forget it now. So Instagram, Teske Media Works, probably the best place to do it. Teske Media Works has a Facebook page as well. Not so active on Twitter these
days.
That's
fine. We don't need to share that then. You know? Yeah, it's Twitter's dying a little bit. But
those are probably the two of the best places to find me.
Hey, it was really good hanging out with you. And for the people listening to this podcast, if you're not into drone footage, you should be. Come on now.
I couldn't say it better.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of It's a Code World. You can check out the show notes at hookagency.com/podcast-24. And that's just the number 24. You can check us out at hookagency.com, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at hookagency. Enjoy us next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Bye. If no one ever hears it, how we gonna learn your song? So come on, come on, come on, come on, you gotta.
Join us next time for It's a Code World, bringing you experts in digital marketing and helping small to mid-sized businesses be more professional. It means the world to us if you could take a minute to rate our podcast on iTunes at hookagency.com/iTunes.